1183, Representative Carol Pitts.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Mr. Chair, I do have a handout that I'll be discussing in a couple minutes. Could I pass that out?
Yeah, please do. Paige, would you help her pass those out, please?
Thank you. House Bill 1183 is being brought to you after conversations with our local school district business manager and also with the endorsement of the South Dakota business officials in the state and across the state. And I have to admit that when this was first brought to me from our business manager, that I asked him many, many, many questions about this particular bill, because as you can see, it's related to fund balance. And any time that we are looking at fund balances, we know it's going to raise red flags. And so this is being brought to you in relation to the fact that many questions have been asked of both our business manager and the association on the reason for this bill. And the reason for the requested change is a fiscal management type of reason. The current 5% fund balance is unrealistically low and fiscally unmanageable for appropriate business management within a school district. That is the reason that's being brought forward, to ease that burden for the business managers in the fund balances and how they use funds within the district. The biggest question in would this be appropriate to move it from 5% to 10% concerns the fact of the extraordinary cost funds that it would allow them to access. In reality, what's important about that is that the extraordinary cost funds has several parameters that a person must get through before you even go to the fund balance parameter. And that's what I've just handed out to you, is that application for the extraordinary cost fund. If you wouldn't mind just turning to the second page, you'll see that Section 1, Section 2 gives the district's certification and application questions that must be answered as they go through this process to apply for those extraordinary cost funds. The fund balance is really probably about the 10th one that you will go to as far as application. And there will be other proponents that will explain that further. But there again, I just want to point out to you that on the application, there's many steps to go through as far as documentation on the need for those extraordinary cost funds, not related specifically just to the fund balance, but many other parameters. And with that, I will stand by for questions and other proponents.
Okay, thank you. I know there are people from out of town on the last three bills that intend to testify. I don't think this bill should take too much time, just to remind the audience. Are there any other proponents on 1183?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm David Peterson, business manager for the Brookings School District and representing the Association of School Business Officials in this matter. And what I would like to address is the very thing that Representative Pitts talked about, and that is to be able to manage the resources. As business officials, we struggle on a regular basis trying to make sure that the revenue is there in appropriate manner to meet the bills. And like I say, it's a real struggle. But when we take a look at this, and I did some calculations for our district as we started out, and in fact, I took a little history from the previous year to try to do some projections. And as you're in touch with your local schools, you'll find that we, as a part of the special education funding, rely upon property taxes. Those property taxes primarily come due in November, December, and again in May and June. And they, at least in our school district, are a significant portion of the special education funding. This past year, actually, we just experienced it. I provided the information to our school board. We could not meet our October expenses with the amount of revenue we had on hand. We had the interfund borrow from the general fund. And we were in a position at the beginning of this year, we were at a 9.87% fund balance. We, you know, it's hard to project in special education because there are so many variables, so many changes throughout the year as either students come in or leave. And what I did as far as my projection was to show that we're going to be slightly under, 5% by the end of the year, but we're going to be close. So that could mean we're just below, we could be just above. Of course, if we're just above, we do not qualify for the extraordinary cost fund. And yet, like I say, I was short in October to meet the bills. As I project this into the spring, I'm going to be short for two different months, and fairly significantly, that being in the month of March and again in April. where I cannot or I do not have the funds in special education fund to pay the bills. So we would need to interfund borrow. We happen to at this time have right just in fact slightly over 20% fund balance in our general fund, so we could borrow from that. And that's in our school, in our particular school district. There are other school districts across the state who do not have that kind of a fund balance in their general fund. It then becomes a similar problem. They're going to be short at the same time the special ed fund is short, and therefore the revenue is not even necessarily going to be available in another fund from which you can borrow. So what I'm saying is, on the part of business officials, really the special education fund should be able to carry itself. It cannot carry itself in the standpoint of a cash flow when we are looking at a 5% qualifier for applying for the extraordinary cost funds.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Christy Johnson with the School Administrators Association. Business officials and special ed directors are part of my umbrella group. We have a delegate assembly where we bring in representatives from all of our six groups. We discuss legislative issues and vote them up or down, and I bring that to you during the legislative session, bring you their decisions. This is a bill that was supported by all members of our association. I think the reasons given explain the need for this bill. One other thing I'd like to mention, the Extraordinary Cost Fund Board is made up primarily of members of my parent group, so they administer the fund on behalf of their fellow school administrators. And I hear from DECA that they do an excellent job. They're tough on the people who apply. They ask them to jump through the hoops. If they don't, the money is denied. But I think everybody sees the need that this would just give a little bit more flexibility in the cash flow area. So we would ask you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll be brief. This is just a common sense bill, I think. The special ed formula has worked very well. I think all of the administrators are well aware of that. This is one of those things that you can fine-tune and make it a little bit better. It's not going to be a problem, I don't think, for anybody.
Any further proponents? Seeing none. Any opponents to House Bill 1183?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Ray Christensen, Department of Education. It's supposed to be possible to turn this off. Are you saving it for something?
Or go ahead.
Is it, if it's not bothering you, I'm just wondering about the microphone. Anyway, this bill does a couple things, but the main argument for it is because of the cash flow issue. And I think we need to, and it's a cash flow issue to get to the extraordinary cost fund. I want to make clear that there's no prohibition on having a 10% or 15% cash balance in the special education funds. It's simply if you want to draw from the extraordinary cost fund, you have to have your reserves in that area down. And so really it's an issue of extraordinary cost fund. What was the purpose of that fund when it was set up? And some of you are in the legislature. I was not at the time. Yeah, I was just starting. So. But I didn't get in on some of the history. But as I understand the Extraordinary Cost Fund, it is a fund of money that is available where schools honestly could not have anticipated nor budgeted for special needs that they have in special ed, extraordinary costs, hence the name. And so by its very nature, it really ought to be something that's fairly rigorous. A 5% fund balance that the committee uses, the committee of many business managers and others, is a triggering point that you have to qualify to get into the extraordinary cost fund. One must ask the question, is it inherently bad to have to borrow from yourself to cash flow something? Because that's what school districts do, as you heard from the testimony. If they're short of funds for October, they simply borrow from their general fund, and that's perfectly permissible to do for that month. Then the next month they can pay it back. And it seems to me prudent to say the extraordinary cost fund ought not to be for something that's easy to get into. And 5%, I think, is a very appropriate number to use as the triggering mechanism, that it needs to be 5%. So the answer from our point of view is the extraordinary cost fund is funds that are available for things you can't anticipate. nor that you have the budget to handle. If you have a 10% budget in your special ed fund, for most kids' schools in this state, that's a considerable amount of money, and probably they really wouldn't qualify from the extraordinary cost fund anyway, because it's really not that big a deal. So I would say on a cash flow basis, they can borrow from themselves. There's nothing wrong with that, and the extraordinary cost fund ought to be something that it's extraordinary cost to get into.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other opponents? Seeing none. Representative Pitts, if you'd like a minute or two to respond to anything that was said. If not, we would open up to questions. No. No, I'm sure you'll have a chance to answer some questions, but just for the proponent, prime sponsor, to rebut. Any questions of either proponents or opponents from the committee? Representative Koistra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The secretary, please.
Yeah. Mr. Christensen.
Mr. Christensen. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Christensen, dealing with the child count, the December 1st, suppose a student moves into the school district and misses that the December 1st child count and has a serious disability and they move out at the end of the year, how do those schools get reimbursed? Is that a problem?
Well, certainly they get reimbursed for their ADM based on the number of days they actually are in school. The child count is on December 1st is for federal reporting, how much federal money is involved. So it really, as I understand it, doesn't affect what funding would be available from the state. But if that student moves in, has extraordinary costs that weren't anticipated and that school needs extra help for them, they go to the extraordinary cost fund and they receive funding for that. And that's not a December 1 issue. I mean, that can be whenever they need it.
Any further questions? I have a question for is it Mr. Peterson? Yeah, I have a question. And I'm sorry, Secretary Christensen raised the issue of borrowing between funds in a school district and what was maybe improper or not right about that. I would ask in a little different way. We've had a lot of talk about business, you know, zero-based budgeting and schools being a business, et cetera. And I don't know anybody that's in business that doesn't borrow from a bank. I don't know anybody who's in agriculture that doesn't borrow a lot from the bank. What is it about borrowing from a bank that is so objectionable when everybody else in business does it?
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
I believe that I could answer that by saying right now if a school district has fund balance of revenue, they get interest on it. It's another source of income that's used for the students. If that source of revenue is gone, we just have less revenue to provide programs for the students. So, you know, certainly we can interfund borrow from another one, but now we have reduced the amount of revenue again that's available to students.
But why is it okay to take taxpayers' dollars and keep the interest, but it's not okay to use taxpayer dollars and pay interest?
You know, that's a philosophical question, I suppose. However, we could respond to it. It's just a matter if the legislature or whoever is suggesting that for whatever reason, we don't need as much money to provide programs for the students. But, you know, philosophically, certainly we can borrow. If we are borrowing, I consider it as just an additional expense in terms of educating our students. And, of course, in all of these, we're controlled very closely. So if we're looking at the special education fund, and I'm not sure about the law here, I gave you the previous situation. If our general fund is also in a position of needing to borrow money, which it is going to be in several of our school districts, then is the charge for the interest, if we're borrowing money, is that chargeable then to the general fund, or can that be charged back to the special education fund? And I do not believe it can be charged to the special education fund. So therefore, we would have the additional cost to the general fund of interest on the money that's even borrowed for special ed fund purposes.
I understand that, and maybe it is a philosophical difference, but it just seems that there's a lot of money being kept in reserve in across the board in all the accounts in the school coffers across the state to avoid paying probably a very little amount of interest based on cash flow needs. And maybe it is, like you say, a source of revenue, and as long as we understand that, then I guess we look at that.
Well, it is. And, Mr. Chairman, the other thing I look at in terms of special education, as I said before, there are times when we would suddenly, and school districts have, suddenly receive a student who is very expensive. And as the Secretary of Education has indicated, you can apply for the extraordinary cost funds. You can do that two times a year. You can apply in December and again in June. But you still got to meet the costs on a monthly basis, some way or another.
Which you get state aid payments monthly, do not?
We do get state aid payments monthly. However, like in our case, when we're looking at the amount of revenue we're receiving from our local taxes, that's a significant portion. Like I say, revenue we receive on a monthly basis, primarily from state aid, might be in the neighborhood of $70,000. We're looking at payments in the months of November, December of over $300,000, and again in May and June. So there's a significant variation from month to month in the amount of revenue we receive. And the expenditures, of course, hold pretty much constant all the way through.
Have you ever had to borrow at prime, which
is
about 5%?
Mr. Chairman, we did borrow for a general fund a number of years ago. We have since gotten out of that situation. And it did cost us, I forget which year it was, but I think we paid like $5,000 in interest that year. We have not yet in the special ed. But like I say, we're going to be very close within another year.
At $5,000 interest, how big is your budget, total budget?
Our total budget, you're considering?
General plus special.
Okay. General fund, we're at about $12.5 million. In special ed, we're running close to $2 million.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Seeing Representative Heineman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So basically, monthly this can vary between 5 and 10%. I mean, and you're saying that it can be fairly volatile, the balance that you'll have in special ed, depending upon how close it is to when you're actually getting your property tax
Mr. Chairman, and be careful, we're speaking of two different things. We're talking cash flow and also fund balance.
Fund balance,
and so when we're speaking of fund balance, that can only be calculated at the end of the year when you've considered all of your revenue and expenditures. But if we look at cash flow from month to month, which is what we're looking at, that cash flow can indeed change very, very much. We can be a negative, we can be maybe as high as 7-8%, and still be looking at a year end of 5% or less for our fund balance.
But you're figuring it just for the final, but you're figuring it just at that point in time. It's not every month that you have to be concerned about whether it's 5 or 10. You're just, it says the ending special fund balance will not exceed 5% for the current fiscal year. So in other words, you're doing it for the entire year.
Right, Mr. Chairman. What we're looking at under this bill is the end of year 5%. So that through the year, that will mean that our cash flow from month to month will fluctuate a tremendous amount, but we have to calculate it and base it on our anticipation where we're going to be at the end of the year for our fund balance.
Any further questions? Seeing none, I'd close to committee action at this time. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I recommend do pass.
Moved by Smith, second by Bartling, do pass. Discussion on that motion.
Just very briefly, Mr. Chairman, if I might, I do see this as providing a little bit more flexibility for the local level. I think it is kind of a common sense. They have a little bit of a struggle with the overall expenses and things dealing with special ed, but I think that's another issue. So I think this is a good bill, and it would help local school districts manage these issues.
Further comments? Seeing none. The question for the committee then is the final passage do pass motion by Smith on House Bill 1183. Those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. The clerk will call the roll.
Bartling?
Aye.
Fogolka?
Aye.
Davis?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Darnus?
No.
Heineman?
No.
Junkie?
No.
Questra?
Aye.
McCauley?
No.
McCoy?
Aye.
Monroe?
No.
Van Norman?
No.
Wick?
No.
Smith?
Aye.
Anna Curious?
No. Motion fails. Further action on House Bill 1183. Further action. Do pass motion has failed. Representative Wick.
Mr. Chairman, I move to defer to the 36-day.
Moved by Wick, 36-day deferral, second by Junkie. Discussion on that motion. Seeing none, those in favor of the 36-day motion will say aye. Opposed, nay. The clerk will call the roll. Deferral to the 36-day.
Bartling?
No.
Gulka?
No.
Davis?
No.
Elliott?
No.
Garnas?
Aye.
Heineman?
Aye.
Junkie?
Aye.
Preistra?
No.
McCauley?
Aye.
McCoy?
No.
Monroe?
Aye.
Van Norman?
Aye.
Wick?
Aye.
Smid?
No.
Akarius?
Aye. Motion carries. Defer to the 36th day.